podcasting brought to you by New Constructs, an independent investment research firm committed to helping our clients invest wisely and confidently. Visit newconstructs.com or tweet us at New Constructs. Here's your host, investor and market veteran, David Trainer.
Hi, this is David Trainer, and today I'm going to explain how the NFL Combine and stock picking are very similar. You want to focus on not the athletes that come up with a high profile and a lot of sensationalism. You want to focus on the stocks that have real cash flows and good valuations. And those two things do not always line up. It turns out that NFL drafting and NFL scouts often make big mistakes, just like investors make mistakes on high profile stocks. First, I want to remind you how easy it is to access our research, newconstructs.com, and go to my blog at newconstructs.com, the research section of our site, where you can access all kinds of free stuff. We got tutorials on how to use the site. We got tutorials on how to uncover accounting distortions. We got white papers on over 30 different types of accounting distortions. It's all there for you to see so you understand how much work we do for you, because we know when you understand how much work we do for you, you're going to be interested in our product, because you're going to realize how much you don't know and how much we help you know to help you protect your portfolio. So, back to NFL Combine and stock picking. I love it how every year so many of these athletes come out of college with all kinds of acclaim, and how they go one, you know, number one or two, number three, they're tops in the drafts. But looking back over time, most of the top 10 draft picks are busts. I'll be honest, if I were an NFL GM, I would do everything I could to trade out of the top 10, probably top 20. No reason to put that much money into that kind of a stock pick. Draft pick. Expectations are too high. It's too expensive. The reward to you, the net benefit, the net profit you can make on that player is too low, because you have to shell out so much front-end money that you got to force that player to play before they're ready to play. Or oftentimes they just can't deliver. But people get caught up in the way an athlete looks and what they do in college against lesser competition, what they do in a pro day against no competition. They don't focus on the fundamentals. So this idea that, you know, investors, it's unbelievable that investors would buy stocks like Netflix and Tesla and a lot of other stocks like we put on the danger zone, not a big surprise to me, because we make this mistake all over the place. Professional scouts in football and baseball. Michael Lewis wrote a book on it. Michael Lewis, one of the best authors about things in the stock market, applied his same kind of analysis to baseball, Moneyball. You probably heard it. They made a movie out of it. It was awesome. And it turns out that they were able to statistically prove that human baseball scouts were terrible, because they got too involved in the optics on the players. If they looked like a good athlete, they drafted them whether or not they were a good performer. And so Billy Beane, the manager of the Oakland A's, was able to dominate on a dollar-per-dollar basis, because he was able to go out and find players that actually produced, even if they didn't look good. So he was getting all these super undervalued players and outperforming his budget by a long shot. And guess what? Billy Beane's main protege was the guy that went and ran the Red Sox and led them to several championships, using the same methodology with more money. And they dominated for a while there. Now everybody uses the same Billy Beane methodology. And it's actually not Billy Beane methodology. It's the name of another guy who was the godfather of the statistics on baseball players that actually mattered, that measured their performance. Not what they looked like, not how good looking an athlete they were, but measured their performance. And when you looked at the right metrics on those baseball players, you could actually measure the real potential and value of that baseball player based on quantifiable, identifiable stats. And that was the recipe of major success for Billy Beane with a small budget with the Oakland A's, and world championships for the Red Sox when they had a big budget. And investors need to do the same thing when it comes to stocks. Don't get caught up on what's on the headlines. Don't get caught up on what Cramer talks about. Don't get caught up on what Wall Street's selling you. Those people are not out there to help you make money. They're out there to help themselves make money, to build their reputation. I've been on Wall Street. I spent a lot of time. I was there before, during, and after the tech bubble. I've seen how the sausage is made, and I've seen how it's killed people's portfolios. I've seen how it's poisoned their ability to understand profitability and valuation. Those are the quantifiable things you can focus on as an investor. That's what you need to focus on. That's what our ratings are all about. Go to the research page of our website and look at my stock rating methodology. You'll see that there are five components. Two components focus 100% on quality of earnings. We look at how the actual cash flows compared to the accounting results. We look at overall return on invested capital, which are the cash on cash returns of the business. And then we have three valuation metrics: free cash flow yield, how much cash flow available to all stakeholders does the company make relative to the enterprise value of the business? Price to economic book value, right? That's the price to the no growth value of the business. The economic book value is the no growth value of the business. It's effectively equal to NOPAT divided by weighted average cost of capital plus cash minus debt and a bunch of other adjustments to get to the pure equity value of the company based on its existing cash flows only. So when the price of the stock is greater than the economic book value, that means the stock price believes cash flows are going to go up. When the price is below the economic book value but still greater than zero, then you have a stock that implies the company's cash flows are going to permanently decline. And then our last metric on the valuation front is the growth appreciation period. That's the number of years of profit growth required to justify the price. So for example, you know, we talk about on our danger zone stocks all the time, and one of the things we love to quote, how much cash flow does the company have to generate to justify the current stock price? Well, for Netflix, wasn't it something like 20% compounded annually? They had to grow cash flow something like 20% compounded annually for 25 years? It's a 25-year market-implied growth appreciation period. That's how we do that. It's a dynamic discounted cash flow. The methodology is freely available on my site. It's an extremely difficult model to build. That's why I built a technology platform to do it, because it's so hard to do in Excel. You blow your brains out before doing it once or twice. I built it once really, really well inside an enterprise software system, and now I can plug an unlimited number of companies through that. That's analytical power. That's using technology to save time and create more insights, which is what we do at New Constructs. And one of the things that's really hard about picking good stocks and understanding the right metrics is actually getting the data to analyze those metrics, right? If it weren't for the statistician in baseball who collected all this great stats and data and created those metrics that in turn fed Billy Bean's strategy, he couldn't do it. Well, investors face the same problem. The data that you get on Yahoo, the data you get from Morningstar, the data you get from Wall Street, it's not complete data. It's incomplete. Shoot, the data feeds that most institutional investors I know use are highly erroneous and incomplete. So you got to focus on someone who's going to get real data. And that's what we do. We specialize. I create a proprietary technology that helps me go in and see more and understand more about what companies do in their financials than anyone in the world. The top regulators of the world are interested. The Financial Accounting Standards Board people rely on it to help them understand where bodies are buried and the implications of certain accounting decisions or rule changes they're making. We know this stuff better than anyone else because we built technology and we've been developing it for 10 years to understand what's going on in filings. And it's that technology that's allowed me to hire and retain super smart, super high educated, and super well-trained analysts to go through filings, not a bunch of third world laborers. I've got the top talent in the world going through filings because they get technology to help them. I like to joke with my clients, how many times have you read an annual report? Most of the time, not many people have ever read one. And those that have love the next joke, which is, even if you're the biggest Warren Buffett acolyte of all time, you're going to read an annual report and you're going to think, man, I don't want to do that again. And I say, you maybe got six in you your whole life. To keep up with a portfolio, a professional money manager, it's got to be probably reading at least 60 or maybe even 600, depending on the number of stocks in his fund, annual reports every year. It's an impossible task. An annual report is on average 200 pages. And these aren't comic book pages. These are complex accounting and finance. It's difficult to read. It's difficult to stay awake. It's difficult to do it right. Just why I had to create technology. And my analysts get a kick out of it because when they find something new in filings, my machine remembers it. They don't have to do the same thing over and over. They're teaching a machine to get smarter and make them faster going through filings. Once we found something, we go find it 10,000 times, the machine, it can do it on its own. And we go looking for the thing that no one else has found. That's what makes us special. And we're able to do this in footnotes in a way that no one else can. That's why our clients rely on us. That's why we find stocks that aren't so sexy, aren't so surprising, like Calmaine Foods, ticker CALM. You can find some of these stocks on our stock pick of the week on the research section of our website. I'm going to name off a few. General Motors was a recent one, ticker GM. Microsoft, ticker MSFT. Republic Services, ticker RSG. These aren't sexy names. These aren't high-profile names. You don't read about them that often. But you know what? They're quality. They're going to perform. Because they've got the stats that you need in order to make intelligent risk-reward decisions and intelligent investment decisions. They've got high-quality earnings and they've got cheap valuations. And when I say cheap valuations, that means the current stock price implies the company's profits are going to grow very little to none at all. A lot of times the stocks we put on our most attractive stocks list, their stock prices imply that their profits will permanently decline by 20, 30, 40, 50%. That's low risk. And we're also seeing a rise in returns on invested capital. That's what you have to have in order to be on the most attractive stocks list. You got to have rising return on invested capital, positive economic earnings or real cash flows, and cheap valuations. Really cheap valuations. Those 20 large cap stocks, 20 best stocks that we cover out of 3,000. And the 20 best small caps too. The most dangerous stocks is the opposite. Low quality earnings. They're showing, in my low quality meaning, low quality, it's the worst kind of low quality. It's accounting earnings are positive and rising while economic earnings are negative and falling. And you got an extremely rich valuation. Talk about bad risk reward. That's what makes our most dangerous stocks list. Again, there's 20 large cap of those and 20 small cap of those. And again, 20, those are the 40 worst stocks we cover pretty much out of 3,000. And they're bad again because they got bad quality earnings and extremely expensive valuations. Terrible risk reward. Why go buy a stock that has expectations for ridiculous amounts of cash flow? Like I said before, with Netflix, 20% compounded annual profit growth for 25 years. And yet its cash flows are low quality too. I mean, that's just bad business. Why do you want to do that? When you could be in stocks where the cash flow qualities are high and good and the expectations are low. It's a no-brainer. Good risk reward. Just like for Billy Beane, it was a no-brainer to go out and buy players who had good stats and good performance and didn't care about the optics. That's why they're undervalued, because the optics aren't good. Do you hear that? They're undervalued because the optics aren't good. It's hard to find undervalued stocks that everybody knows about, because if it's something that everyone knows about, it doesn't stay undervalued for long, right? So that's why you got to do, as Ben Graham said, you got to look around for the cigarette butts, the things that other people have discarded. But do it with real data and do it with real diligence, and I think you'll be a lot more successful. Thanks and have a great weekend.